Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
VA education benefits allowed me to earn a degree without the type of student debt that so many people face. My service was then, my benefits are now.
Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov. Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello, and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond, and I have Sarah Raymond here today. So I love podcasting, and of course I love Sarah. So this is really special.
I'm excited to be here with you.
So Sarah and I were talking about chatting more often for the audience about the things in our life and how we use kind of mindfulness-based principles to navigate them in hopes to convey, you know, new strategies for maybe the audience in ways that they could implement them into their life, and hopefully it helps them dance their dance.
Yeah, I feel like some of the things that we're going through in our life together and individually, we've had a lot of learning lessons, and we hope to share them with you so that maybe they can be of value to you. I always find learning from other people's experiences is a valuable lesson. So hopefully we can share that with you.
For sure. So tell me, Sarah, what's new with you?
What's new? That's a vague and broad question. Well, I think like a lot of people, I've had a fairly stressful last 2 years, stressors that I've never experienced before, and definitely in the last month, a little bit of heightened stress and challenges. That's what's going on. Well, and lots of things to be grateful for, lots of blessings, and trying really hard to take time to recognize those and to be grateful for them.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary from how I've observed it all.
Yeah,
I too have been, I guess, juggling some stressful things. And it's been interesting because I think on some level, I am like really spoiled. Like, you guys don't know how lucky I am. I mean, we all kind of have, I don't know, a little Sarah in our pocket. Not as like possession, but like access to what I consider just a really special soul that kind of permeates our household here. And, you know, everyone else in the house gets to kind of resonate off all this.
Sweet.
Like energy that you bring, and then like I also get kind of direct access to not just you, but like this skill that you have developed and cultivated. I think you've always been like a natural when it comes to providing like a nourishing environment for the people very close to you, like in proximity in the moment. But as you've been working this like hypnotherapy practice, those skills have seemed to sharpen in a way that
I get to reap the benefits of in real time when life happens and I'm maybe under a load of stress where I can't check myself or recognize that, like, oh, I need to stop. I need to consider what I'm experiencing here, what's really going on deep down. And, like, I can't do that in the moment. And I'm lucky enough to have you, because we know each other very well. And, like, you recognize maybe my triggers long before I do. But recently I was having a day, and maybe you could explain why this happens to people, but I was having a day where I was really, mentally not in a good place because of, like, life situation things.
Right.
And, you just, like, I think I came into the room and you were reading and you, like, recognized immediately and just, like, closed your book and started asking me questions. And before I know it, I'm like, oh shit, I'm getting therapy right now. And, you have this art form where it's seamless. It's like painless from going to, okay, you just heard someone that's troubled, or even maybe just seen on my face. And, like, you know these questions to ask to work me through this process where, like, the framework in which that experience is, like, being manifested in me is just transformed in a very short period of time, like minutes. And, I've leaned on that many times over the years. Like, you've what I've considered kind of walked me off the cliff, of the edge of the cliff a lot of times. And I would like to just take a moment and acknowledge, like, how lucky I am that that not only do I have access to that, but your willingness to use that tool set, with the people in your life, which I happen to be.
Well, I'm happy to do so. And I just want to make sure that it's clear that I would always ask your permission and make sure that you're on board. I'm not just, like, secretively working through hypnosis with you.
So you say.
No, I definitely asked permission. Like, do you want to go through this process?
Oh, I don't know if I remember all that.
Oh, okay. I remember.
Did I sign a waiver?
You didn't sign any waiver other than our marriage certificate. I think that counts. But in a session, when I'm working with someone, they would come to me with a specific issue or problem or something that they want to work on. And that is the entrance into the session. But the beauty of what you went through with my guidance the other night was you were, like, in it, right? You were feeling all the emotions and you were triggered, for lack of a better word, right? And that is a like big opening into healing. It's like an opportunity. And to be able to say, I'm feeling this way, which maybe you could share a little bit about. Are you open to sharing how you're feeling?
Well, I don't know if you listen to the podcast, but I've probably referenced that, like, I have, I think, some deep embedded emotional stuff that stems from, like, parents splitting up. So this was related to the relationship with my father, which is in a very odd place now. And it was, like, the simple thing of getting a text.
Mm.
And it was, like, not a
warm and fuzzy text.
It was not even, like, that meaningful of a text. It was just the act of rekindling, like, just thinking about a person that you do have, like, a history with.
Right.
And just in an instant, like, your nervous system's in a different place.
Right.
Your blood's rushing. Working against you.
In my interpretation would be, like, you are not your adult self responding to that text message. You are reacting as if you're still at that age of whatever the trauma was. So, for example, I know that your parents separated when you were four. And so it could have been your four-year-old self reacting to that text. And I don't know if this is exactly what happened, but that four-year-old you was stuck in a traumatic event. And when you get the text, it's as if you go back in time and you are that four-year-old boy and you don't have the logic and the knowledge and the, you know, wherewithal to respond as your adult self.
But, I mean, I guess I feel like I've done a lot in the last several years working through those issues to the point where, I mean, I guess maybe the process is not so black and white or clean. Like, it's there's a gradient. And maybe when you initially do work, and I'm just making this up here, but, like, maybe when you start to initially do work on a past trauma, maybe for some people it's like a one and done. And maybe there's, like, a total pile of stuff that's been built on top of that initial trauma. So, like, when you initially do work, maybe you clean up two-thirds of it. And then, like, a year later, you dig a few, dig a little bit more out of the pile, and, you know, you're 80% through. And then, like, you just got to chip away a little bit here and there as things arise.
Yeah, I would say that there's definitely a path. It's not always linear, meaning you might do a little bit of work and have a little deeper understanding of your trauma and of how you're reacting. And that might improve some situations, but you might feel like you're regressing at times and things get harder before they get better. And I would say that I don't really think there's a 100% end of the practice. Right. I use the reference of gardening a lot because, you know, I'm out in the garden and my mind is comparing. It's thinking of, like, oh, this is sort of like what I do in my work with helping my inner child. And so what I mean by that is there's always, like, weeding to be done, right? There will always be things that we want to take out of our mind space and have new things. Like, we plant vegetable plants in our garden, but that doesn't mean that we're only going to have those vegetable plants growing. We might still have some of those other plants that we don't want. So we have to be nurturing the garden always. And that's sort of like the practice of healing, right?
So we're all screwed because we have to do this forever.
I don't think it's we're all screwed. We're all blessed with this opportunity to learn and grow and to, right? These are all opportunities.
See what I mean? Sarah has this natural positive energy. I'm looking for ways to just bring it down. And you lift it up very easily.
Well, I do think that when you have a realization like you had the other day about, like, this is me responding to the text as that, I'm just going to keep saying four-year-old. I don't know if that's exactly right, but as your younger self. When you have that realization, you're more likely to be able to realize the same thing is happening in other situations. So you have an awareness that's developed. But that doesn't mean it's not going to keep happening, right? The awareness is the first step. And then we can build some tools on top of the awareness to help you get through that. And an example of that might be same scenario. You receive this text from your father. You're immediately taken back in time to your younger self. And you start to react. You might even want to send a reactive text, but you recognize, you say, okay, that's my inner child being triggered from past emotional trauma. And in that moment, you can say, okay, I know you're scared, talking to your younger self, to your inner child. I know you're scared with all reason to be scared or to be upset, right? Like, that time in your life was very challenging. It was hard to have your father leave your home and wonder if it's your fault. That's like you validating the fears or the emotions of your younger self. And then the next step is like, I got this. You can trust me. I'll take care of you. I'll love you unconditionally. I'll make sure all of your needs are met. If you can kind of dial back those big emotions so that I can help the situation, I can manage or deal with the situation in a calm and compassionate way. So it's like you're telling your younger self, I've got your back.
Gotcha. I'm here for you.
I'm here for you. I meet your needs. You're not denying his emotions, right? Because that would make it probably worse. Like, don't feel like that.
Right.
Right.
But there's a, like, there's an implication that you have to be seen first. Like, mm-hmm. before you could be... I'm here for you. I got your back. It's like, oh, I see you.
Yeah.
And that is probably hard to create intrinsically, like from yourself deciding to look back and see yourself when you're in it.
Right. Well, that's the invitation is when you're in it.
Yeah.
That's the invitation. Like, what's this about?
I wonder what, like, the other day when this happened, you know, it was something as simple as a text, somewhat meaningless text in a way, but, I wonder how many things, what the potential is, like, what forms do these reminders come in that we don't recognize, whether it's like, a scent of a meal that's, reminds you of a childhood or maybe a meal that you don't like because your stepmom used to force you to eat it and you never liked it or whatever. Like, how many things kind of go under the radar that are affecting us that we're unaware and that, you know, you'd have to get, not just do work, but maybe get lucky to be able to recognize.
Well, think about all the different ways that we take in input. We have our senses, right? That's the external interpretation of our experience. We have an internal interpretation of our experience. Like, if you've ever in meditation, for example, that's a good time for introspection, is you feel the energy. Like, let's say you're listening to a guided meditation and the guide is suggesting to pay attention to your hands. Like, those are ones that I always feel like a lot of things, a lot of energy, feelings, sensations. And it's as if you're recognizing your hands from within yourself, right? Maybe it feels like buzzing or tingling, but that's a form of perception,
right?
And you could feel it in your heart or in your gut or lots of different ways to recognize. And then we also have like our proprioception, right? Where our body is in space, and we might use that a lot in our like mindful based movement practices, yoga, Pilates, Qigong, you know, all of those movement practices are using extroception. I don't know if that's exactly how you say that word, but like perceiving from external, perceiving from internal, and then the sense of like where our body is in space. So any of those three different avenues could be openings into the awareness of your experience.
Right? Okay.
Does that make sense?
That was a little hard for me to follow, but I'm sure it makes sense.
Well, you were asking about how many different ways we can...
Gotcha.
Be aware of how our past is.
Right. And since our sensory organs are kind of an infinite spectrum of what they could bring in.
Right. So if you've ever been in like a yoga class and someone starts crying, that's movement of energy that might have been stuck and just had the opportunity to be released through the movement. And, I mean, I know I've experienced before, and it's like, what is happening here? But instead of like pushing it down and saying, oh, it's not right to be crying in a yoga class, which is what I think most people would probably do. Like, why am I crying right now? But that's the invitation to say something is needing my attention. It's like an emergency signal going off in a way. Mm. And to be able to have the willingness to stop and look and listen to those signals, to those messages that your body is giving you, is an opportunity. Does that make more sense now?
Yeah, and then, you know, in movement, I mean, I have a passionate movement practice where I spend a lot of time moving passionate. My body.
We might also call it a little
obsessive
or an addiction, but
yeah. But I, you know, and maybe it's like a tool sometimes I use to channel that excess energy that would otherwise rattle around in my mind through like physical exertion, so that it's like I have somewhere to put it. Maybe that's a different method. Maybe that's the same as like crying. Like, you know, I'm working through some things, and maybe you can purge them out. And maybe you could process them internally. Maybe you could just fart and they'll come out. Maybe if you fart during yoga, it's like, instead of the pressure going out your eyes and crying, it's like a pressure valve that releases.
Maybe. I mean, we always say better out than in,
better
right?
Out than in.
And that applies to so many things. All right, we're getting on a tangent here.
Yeah, I mean, there's been many a times where I've been in a movement session and, you know, the moving of the body is in some way like an answer to the invitation.
Yeah.
Like you start to move, you start to feel, and then you direct that energy into something and it's useful. And it's very rare that like I'll have a session where I'm exerting myself physically and you just don't come out the other end feeling better from doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, exercise,
yeah,
we're very passionate about it.
Well, I think that our culture is not designed, but we have a collective tendency to really live inside of our heads and not inside of our bodies, because everything is very intellectual and it's driven by progress and success and accomplishments. And when you can move in a mindful, intentional way, it's allowing you to get out of your head and more in tune with and in touch with your body. So like all of the practices that we have on our channel are mindful movement. That's the essence of our.
Yeah, I would pick a bone with that one though. Like you, when you mention, I think you'll agree, but like you mention a list of modalities as of like, these are the mindful movements. But I think when the intention is there and there is a sense of like connection with what you're doing with your body, I think it could be any form.
I definitely agree
of
with you.
Movement or exercise, or you could be, mowing the lawn. And it can be a mindful movement practice.
Yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
I mean, I find over the last few years, I've been doing a lot of strength training where it's pretty much by myself, and it has really developed into a meditative practice.
Yeah. You want to talk about your pre-deadlift routine?
No.
I only say that out of love because it's really cute to watch you do your pre-deadlift.
Oh,
routine.
You mean before a heavy set?
Yes.
Okay. I may or may not. It's been said that I may dance a little prior to heavy sets of deadlifting.
You definitely do. I need to get it on recording.
I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that's required.
No, I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, it's one of those things, I forget who I heard mention this, it might have been Sam Harris talking about, he's the guy that runs the Waking Up app, or Making Sense Now it's called, I think, or maybe, I don't know, maybe the podcast just changed name, but he's excellent to listen to when he talks about the concepts around meditation. And I think he describes in a way like, you know, it's once you have meditated and you've experienced that and practiced it, you can kind of apply it to anything.
Yeah.
But before you've taken the time to, like, I don't know, cultivate whatever happens when you sit still and watch your breath or whatever, you know, you don't have like a reference point. So like you might go to the gym or walk the dog or mow the lawn or whatever, and then the way you do that shifts as you start practicing the stillness and the self-observation.
Sure. I wonder if you have a thought on it going the other direction, meaning a lot of people will say, oh, well, I can't meditate. I can't sit still that long. I need to be moving and doing and all of that jazz. And I wonder if you can cultivate a mindfulness practice or build or develop a mindfulness practice in movement. And it might not necessarily be just like your everyday day-to-day things, but being intentional about going for a walk and like noticing your breath as you're moving slowly, noticing the foot strike as you, you know, move, put one foot in front of the other, noticing the sounds around you. And that might be a way into a more formal, like seated meditation practice.
Maybe. I'm sure there's been someone out there that's done it that way.
Yeah, because some days I go to sit down in my meditation practice and it's like, well, this isn't happening today. You know, I start with my breath. I maybe go into a body scan. But then it's like the energy of my mind is so busy that even my meditation practice feels like it's jumping from one thing to the other. And it's just...
Well, I think traditionally, like, that's why yogis do it the way they do. Like, you move the body first.
Right.
So that you're ready to sit and be still. And then you watch the breath or you practice the breath. And then meditation arises out of that process. Right. There's a reason for that. Like, I know my current routine, and I've been riding this for a while, is, you know, I'm not even trying to, like, meditate in the morning before my workout. Like, we have a relaxing morning. Together, we have a tradition now where we basically drink our coffee in bed together. We have the amp coil going. If you guys want to learn what that amp coil is, there is a podcast on that. Maybe we could link to the show notes.
That's a good idea.
I interviewed Freddie Kimmel to talk about that technology. It's like the one technology biohacking thing that we have that the family relies on.
It is a really nice morning routine.
It's a great morning routine. But then, like, within not so long, I usually start an exercise routine. And then after that is when I'll get my stillness, usually in the sauna, and you know, I've got all the energy out. Like, I'm already kind of wore myself out enough, where it's just more easy to sit still without the busy mind. And then usually at night I'll have another session of some sort where I'll at least like get on the floor, roll around, stretch, or a more formal asana practice. Oftentimes right here in this space, and then I'll wind down with like a bath or chanting or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if I tried to do the stillness part before the physical effort, it would be less likely to be productive use of time, I think.
Yeah. Well, on that note, maybe we could share that we are planning on doing some of these mindful movement types of practices live on the channel once a month. So we'll share the job and start with some movement based practices, maybe go into some breath work and meditation, all live for our wonderful community.
Live sounds fun. Yeah. So maybe I'll touch on that a little bit just to clarify some ideas around maybe the differences of how
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
You and I will probably do that. So I like to do a lot of different modalities when I'm exercising, but really I stay as general as possible usually, or the majority of the time. So within like exercise modalities, you know, and there's a lot of overlap here, of course, but you can kind of compartmentalize where there's like a specific modality, like right. Pilates would be called maybe a specific modality, maybe yoga. It could be ballroom dancing, like whatever the physical activity is.
Right.
And you can practice those where the focus of the session is really that modality and the concepts that those modalities, you know, are value, I guess.
Right.
And what I like to do, just because it's the thing I've learned in my like movement profession that's resonated the most with me, is the value of being general, meaning like the human, think of it more as the human modality. So like there's certain things that are shared amongst the species for a reason that kind of underlie everything they do. And a lot of that could be learned about when you study the first year of a human, because that's where we go through this process where we go through this developmental sequence where we all kind of learn how to move.
Right. That's why you're watching our 9-month-old nephew so closely.
Yeah, I am. I'm a little obsessed about watching how very small children move, because I feel like they're our greatest teachers, and if there was a fountain of youth, it's to look at what 1-year-olds and 2-year-olds do and mimic, do some of that,
yeah.
You know, and find a way to appropriately drip that into your lifestyle. And even though that might feel ridiculous at first as an adult, because we're so far removed from some of those activities, but the value of getting on the floor and rolling around like a baby is, it's hard for me. It just can't be overstated. Like it's really like the core of my movement practice.
Yeah,
doing baby like things, and then I like to drip on top of that the yoga, the strength training, the power development, some skateboarding, some silly play and dance or whatever. But working on that general stuff, the foundation, giving me some foundational like competency of how I can navigate my body in space, allows me to enjoy the other things. And be able to like succeed at them more with a lower risk of getting hurt along the way.
Yeah.
Somebody that just generally moves really well, you could kind of teach them anything. I mean, you're going to have limits in any direction there. Like, doesn't mean you could teach someone that's 5'5" to play in the NBA just because they move well. There will be limitations, but if you move well, you're going to be able to excel more at kind of any specific modality.
Right. We've seen a little bit of that kind of in action with our son, and he loves the skateboard. And
oh, yeah.
You've been teaching him a lot of these general, you know, developmental patterns and movement to help support and build like just a foundation so that when he goes into his skill, his sport, then he's more proficient, efficient, less likely to be injured.
Yeah, and it's been nice to watch him. Like, his body's really there for him. Even when he, like, bangs himself up, he's extremely resilient and bounces back pretty quickly. And, you know, it seems like there's nothing he's limited to on the skate park now because he doesn't have the general ability. It's just that, like, he hasn't done that skill enough yet, because skateboarding is one of the things that the learning curve is just, it's just a very slow process. Like,
yeah, like how many kickflips do you need to practice before?
The commitment you need. It's like, it's a sport of failure. It's just like relentless failure. We've seen our son, you know, attempt a trick hundreds of times, and then he lands it, and then he still might land it, you know,
but
once
the,
every 20 times.
The look
times
on
after
his
that,
face when he lands it is
priceless.
It is priceless.
It's priceless.
Yeah.
So that gives you guys a little context. You know, when we do videos, that there'll be like a difference, and that's kind of some context around those differences. Sarah's are more likely to be more specific to a modality, and I am intentionally trying to avoid specificity and be general.
Yeah. Well, you know, they'll have opportunity to try both of our practices. So monthly live, and then we do have a weekly live in our membership. So you can try it for free on the channel. And if you like it and you want more, then the membership is a great opportunity for that as well. Yeah.
Is there anything else that's like on the horizon or offerings that we'd want to talk about?
No, I mean, we just have our regular offerings. So one-on-one sessions, we have courses that are great for specific topics like anxiety or confidence, and new ones will be coming up. We're shooting for 6 a year. So every other month or so, we'll have a new workshop with a specific topic. So you can always do that and work through a hypnotherapy process on your own, have tools to support you on an ongoing basis. And those are all individual courses, or they're sold as sort of a bundle in the annual membership, which comes with all of the weekly live classes as well.
Yeah, so I guess if you guys have questions about that, just shoot us an email.
Yeah, or we'll put all the links in the description of the video and the podcast, and you can always leave comments as well.
And on as far as that one-on-one offerings, I've been training one-on-one in person for quite some time, and I'm working my way out of that, out of our brick-and-mortar location. So very soon we'll be putting those offerings through the Mindful Movement.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in working one-on-one with me, that there'll be more details of what that would look like, and see if it's like a good fit for you. And there's a big movement component of of that process. But so when that's ready, then we'll send that out to you, and you guys could see what that offering is.
Yeah.
But it should be soon. And then
yeah, and the only other thing I would say is, you know, we talked a lot about mindfulness-based practices and living in a way that is in a heightened state of awareness, and that's not maybe the right word, but like being aware of what you're experiencing. And if that is of interest to you and resonates with you, we do have a free 7-day course that teaches the foundations of mindfulness and meditation. So that's a great way to get to know us. So I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Great. And what else are you going to do today?
I'm going to go eat some breakfast.
All right.
After this, I haven't eaten today. How about you?
I'll probably be the one making you breakfast.
Yes, you had your moment in the beginning of this conversation to share your gratitude for spending time with me, and I will reciprocate and share all my gratitude for all the amazing meals that you cook me and our family, and I couldn't be more grateful for that, to be well fed and nourished, so thank you.
You're very welcome. It's my honor to feed you along the way. I do take a lot of joy in feeding the people that I love.
Yeah, well, we all appreciate it.
See, yeah, you're spoiled.
Yeah, we are. We are.
All right, folks out there, thanks for listening to our chat today. And as always, we're grateful for you guys out there and all the support we get along the way.
Can't wait to do this again.
All right, we'll do it again soon. All right, have a good day, everybody.